I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, we're fanning ourselves because it is hot. How hot is it, you ask? It's scorching.
It's like as soon as you're just standing out here, I'm like in a layer of sweat.
Extreme heat causes pavement to expand, and when it runs out of room, it can buckle or blow out, causing uneven surfaces, sometimes significantly uneven, creating potentially dangerous situations for drivers.
There's even some of this laid over the top of it like a wet wool blanket.
It is exactly like Matthew McConaughey in that movie Wolf of Wall Street, where he says it's a wazzy, it's a woozy, fugazi, fugazi. They don't know. Nobody knows.
But when we say it's hot outside, what's the difference between a heat advisory and a heat watch? Brian Thompson of AccuWeather breaks it down for us on WWJ News Radio in Detroit.
Give us an overview and help make the distinction between the heat advisory, heat watch that will run starting tomorrow through Tuesday. Help us understand the difference there.
Well, the concern is that the heat is going to be worse as we get into different levels of temperature and heat index values that days need to meet to reach heat advisory criteria versus what will eventually be perhaps an extreme heat warning criteria. Watch is kind of the precursor to that. AccuWeather real field temperatures at or over 100 each afternoon.
A lot of people say that when it's hot, they don't want to eat. But what happens when you're on one of the GLP-1 drugs meant to help combat weight? Turns out, Ozempic and a hot day can be a pretty bad combination. Here's more from WWJ.
We saw this article, the idea that there are people taking Ozempic or something similar, and when it kind of quenches your hunger, it also quenches your thirst, which could be dangerous if it's hot like this, because your body might not be giving you the signs that you need to hydrate. So are you noticing that this is kind of, it's kind of a new thing? Like, it's almost a modern day problem we didn't really, I guess, pre-think about. It's just kind of something that creeped up on us. But what are your overall thoughts on it?
Yeah, so kind of give some background, medicines like Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, for the most part, are very well tolerated. They're a class of medicine known as GLP-1 medications. They work specifically by slowing down gastric emptying. So that's kind of where patients have to see the appetite curving. Also helps with the weight loss. It's one of the ways in which we get good blood sugar control for diabetics. So certain patients absolutely could have a delicate fluid balance. Somebody who maybe has diabetes and heart failure, or diabetes and chronic kidney disease. And so most certainly they could be at risk for a net fluid loss, especially if they're out in the heat and it's hot. So one of the things that we'll always educate our patients on when they're taking these medicines, kind of regardless of their medical history, but definitely especially if they do have fluid restrictions or different fluid needs, we say the most important thing that you can remember, both to mitigate side effects and to feel well on the medicine, is making sure you're drinking plenty of water throughout the day and eating smaller, more frequent meals. That is one of the tips, tricks that we have patients use when they're on these medications, because yes, that's absolutely the case. One of the benefits of the medicine is changing the appetite so that the patients do eat less, and we do see positive benefits from that in relations to management of their chronic disease. But absolutely, they are at risk for that. So definitely consulting with your doctor if you're noticing signs of dehydration is very important. And if you are having things like fatigue, dizziness, lightheadedness, you probably should be seen either in the urgent care setting or calling your primary care physician.
So I guess I don't know a lot about how these different drugs work. So, like, let's say you are taking one of these and you need to take extra water in. You know, it's super hot. You may be outside. Mm-hmm. You have a job. And you have to take extra liquids just to make up for the hydration loss. So would the extra liquids make you feel worse? Would it make you sick? Is there a way that a person may feel that it's choosing between getting sick and staying hydrated?
Sure. And so we would definitely advise anyone that if they do feel sick with eating, they should be talking to your doctor, because if you're taking these medicines properly and having proper nutrition and hydration, as I discussed earlier, those side effects of nausea, upset stomach, maybe even bloating, those should be relatively well mitigated through kind of, again, adhering to that, drinking water throughout the day, eating smaller, more frequent meals. But yes, absolutely. If they're feeling that way, there's already something that needs to be adjusted, and they should be talking to their doctor, because like you said, those are, real side effects that we educate our patients on. And again, absolutely, with how hot it is outside, if somebody is feeling that way, they could get a net negative fluid balance, could get dehydrated, and could have symptoms related to that.
Is water the best in situations like this? I know everyone says, you know, drink plenty of water or electrolytes, you know, the Gatorade.
Yeah.
So if someone's on this type of medication, is water still the best thing to do?
Water, I would say, as long as you're not experiencing severe symptoms related to dehydration, water is perfect. And the one reason why we would recommend water would be, again, a lot of the GLP-1 medications that have FDA indications for diabetes, patients have to watch how much sugar they intake. So if you're taking something like Gatorade, Pedialyte, those are very heavy in sugar. And so sometimes if they take in too much sugar, even if they're dehydrated, it can spike their blood sugar, and that can cause other issues, especially, again, if they're diabetic. Sometimes having too much blood sugar can actually make them go to the bathroom more, urinate more, and so they can actually get even more dehydrated. So it would be important to start with water. And then if you call your doctor and they say, hey, you know, why don't you switch to what we call an oral rehydration solution, which is Gatorade or Pedialyte, then I think that would be okay. But yeah, water is usually always best.
Situations like this where it's really hot, I heard that milk actually hydrates you better. It keeps you hydrated longer. Is that true?
I don't think there's any evidence-based studies that would support that, but there is nothing, you know, skim milk, if you're looking at the contents of skim milk, it's basically water. So anything that can keep you cool and hydrated, and again, skim milk would have a relatively low, there is some lactose in it, but I think that would be okay. I wouldn't have any objections to a patient calling me and saying, hey, you know, I'm feeling dehydrated. Is it okay if I insert some glasses of skim milk into my diet? I don't think that there's anything that says that would cause the patient any harm.
Great. Anything else that we need to know about?
Yeah, I'm really happy that we're having this call, because this is, you know, this heat definitely causes a lot of issues for a lot of patients. And so we hope that patients do reach out to us, so that we can educate them both on safety, fun in the sun, and how to best manage their health when we're experiencing heat waves like this. So my other piece of advocation would just be, reach out to your doctor.
The extreme heat sizzling across the United States is also bad for your gardens. Here's more on that.
How's the heat going to affect your gardens, your flower beds? Joining us live is Dean Darren from English Gardens. Good morning, Dean. Obviously, you know, it gets hot. It's uncomfortable for humans, and I'm guessing it's not so great for plants either.
Yeah. Hey, Greg. Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, plants can get stressed this time of year for sure. When we have this extreme heat, it's just important to look after your plants. They'll usually tell you when they're not happy by wilting, and that might be a sign that they might be dry. You always want to check, because a wilting plant could be overwatered also, and that some people tend to think sometimes when it gets this hot they need to water their plants 3 times a day, and that's also not good. So yeah.
Now some people say, you know, you should never water your plants when it's 95 or 100 degrees. Others say, no, it doesn't really matter, but your water just is going to evaporate. So what's the real story on that?
Well, the most important thing would be that do it early in the morning. That's the best. But if a plant needs water, by all means, even if it's in the heat of the day, please water it. You want to probably avoid getting a lot of water on the foliage. That can burn through like a magnifying glass. So water the soil, keep your clients happy.
All right. Along with the heat, we want to talk about your event here, Pollinator Palooza, second day. So what's that about?
Yeah. So we are celebrating National Pollinator Week this week. Today's the last day. And it's we have an event going on in the store bringing awareness to pollinators. And pollinators are any animal that moves pollen from one flower to another on a plant. And it could be insects, birds, even mammals or lizards. So there's a lot of different pollinators. Hummingbirds are a great pollinator. And we're doing an awareness to these pollinators and how to protect them. We have a lot of things going on in the stores, including live butterfly exhibits, a pollinator scavenger hunt. We have a seminar today at noon in all locations on pollinators. And also at 1:30, we have an adult workshop to create a pollinator annual patio pot. And if anyone is interested in possibly making one of these patio pots, there is a charge for it, but spots are limited. Best to just, at this point, call into the store that you'd want to go to see if there's any spots available.
How's the butterfly population? Are they doing okay now in Michigan?
Yeah, I think so. We have a good population. There's no risks. Biggest, thing that we always preach in our garden pharmacies is if you're going to use any kind of chemical, whether it's a organic or synthetic, please follow the directions. And there are some very key things along with not doing it in the middle of the day when these insects or animals could be out pollinating. No issues with butterflies though right now.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, if you have not planted a garden or put your flowers in yet, Dean, I'm looking at myself here as one of those in the mirror. Is it too late for me?
No, absolutely not. We still are fully stocked with beautiful annuals, perennials, nursery stock. And actually, our biggest sale of the year is going on right now. It ends today. Everything in the store is 25% off minimum. That means anything that wasn't on sale, isn't on sale, is on sale. So the entire store is 25 to 60% off. We are open till 6 o'clock tonight. And it's a great time to come in and stock up on things you may need in the future and also beautiful plants that you could enjoy right now.
If I put in my tomatoes or peppers now, though, will I still get them in time to have them grow?
Yeah, we still have some vegetable plants left. Yes, you will get a harvest. It's just going to take a little bit longer for them to start bearing fruit. But if you think about it, most people planted their gardens around maybe May 15th, May 20th. It's only 30 days later. So you just probably expect fruit 30 days later than you normally would get it. So, yeah, if you can find good tomatoes, peppers, things like that, and we do still have some of those in stock, it's not too late to plant.
All right. Sounds good, Dean. We appreciate the time and happy gardening to everybody.
You know what else it's bad for? Your car. Take a listen with KYW Radio in Philadelphia.
We are going to be baking in near 100 degree heat today and over the next few days, and it will feel even hotter than that. And your car is baking as well. AAA says summer heat threatens your car battery even more than the winter freeze. So you need to do some maintenance. Jana Tidwell is with AAA Public Affairs.
You can take your vehicle to any trusted mechanic. A battery test is typically a free test. takes just a few minutes, and it tells you exactly the strength of your battery.
Tidwell says having your tires underinflated when it's hot can often lead to a blowout.
You want to make sure that you keep your tires at normal tire pressure. If the tire pressure is low for any reason, you want to make sure that you fill it up. Check the inside driver's door panel for the exact PSI for your vehicle.
AAA responded to nearly 98,000 emergency roadside service calls in Philadelphia and surrounding counties last summer. 43% of those calls were for dead car batteries and flat tires.
So if you find yourself overwhelmed by heat, what exactly should you do? Dr. David Donaldson, Chief of Emergency Medicine at Corwell Health Beaumont Troy Hospital, broke it down.
But prevention is the key. Stay out of the heat the best you can. If you have to be outside, make sure you wear light, breathable clothing, light clothing, hats, wide-brim hats, sunscreen. Take breaks if you're outside working. Try to get in some shade. And also part of the prevention, too, is hydration. And not only water, but you have to hydrate with electrolytes as well. So sports drinks, juices, in addition to water.
What's the importance of those Gatorades and stuff like that? Because I think a lot of people just think, oh, water, water, water. But why is electrolytes in your system good for days like this?
Yeah, as you sweat out in the heat, you lose water as well as electrolytes. So if you only replenish the water, you can really dilute your electrolytes, so it's important to replenish those as well.
So about the water, I've got my big bottle here in the studio. Even though it's not sunny out yet, I'm getting prepared here for the afternoon hours. The importance of, staying hydrated and also making sure you've got plenty of electrolytes in you. If you don't, what kind of danger could that be if you're not hydrated enough?
Sure. So heat-related illness is really a progression of a couple stages. If you don't stay hydrated, don't keep the electrolytes and sugars where they're supposed to be, you'll develop heat cramps, they call it, and that's where you start to develop some spasm in your muscles, and that's from electrolyte loss. That can progress to what's called heat exhaustion, and that's where you start to sweat real heavy, fatigue, dizziness, nausea, your heart rate goes up. And if you don't stop at that point and seek some shelter, some cool environment, replenish your electrolytes and your fluids, that can progress into what's called heat stroke. And that's a real true medical emergency. At that point, you no longer sweat. You can have some alteration like in your mental status. You can even collapse, have seizures and that sort of thing.
Doctor, do you expect this to be a pretty busy weekend in the ER?
I do. We're ready for it. With these heats, we haven't seen anything quite yet, but again, the temps aren't what they're going to be in the high 90s, I think, this weekend. So we are ready, and hopefully we don't see a lot of patients because, again, prevention is the key. But we're here to help, certainly, if it progresses to either heat exhaustion or heat stroke. But if you start to really have changes in the way you behave, if you no longer sweat, if you feel faint, then that's the time to seek medical care.
And for others, too, should you watch out for those signs and kind of be aware of people around you, maybe your neighbors, friends, or family you might be hanging out with?
Yes. The most at-risk people are those that can't regulate their own temperatures. So like infants, toddlers, the elderly, there's some medications that can put you at risk. So it's very important if you have people at risk, neighbors, friends, family, that sort of thing, to check on them and make sure they're safe.
These kinds of temperatures, we're looking at the forecast right now, 96 these next few days, the real field temps in the 100s. If precautions aren't taken, if someone's not in an air-conditioned building, this could be deadly too, correct?
That's correct, yes. Again, if it progresses to that heat stroke category, that you stop sweating, that you start having behavioral changes, you start feeling faint, that sort of thing is a true, true medical emergency. And if you don't seek care promptly, if you have those symptoms, it can lead to death.
What is one thing that people maybe don't think about when it comes to heat like this that they should when it comes to taking precautions?
I think just preventing is really the key. And I think if you're outside doing stuff, you might get tied up in your activity and not realize that, some time has gone by and you've really significantly lost electrolytes and fluids. And at that point, if you don't seek shelter and hydrate, you may have gone kind of tipped over the edge, if you will. So I think, again, prevention is the key. If you can't stay out of it, you know, because of your job or, you know, activities, sporting activities and whatnot, just make sure you take breaks, get an AC and air conditioning as best as you can. And just, like I said, keep hydrated with electrolytes, sports drinks, and water.
All right, I want to end on a fun one, Doctor. You know, when it comes to fun ways to beat the heat that are also healthy, it could be food and activity, staying indoors, anything. What's your favorite when it comes to staying safe and maybe having a little fun this weekend, too?
Swimming, for sure. Water will keep you cool. And in fact, it kind of ties into the way we treat somebody with heat stroke. Water evaporation is the quickest way to cool somebody down. So if you're in that scenario, you want to have fun, you want to stay cool, you know, you can get to a lake, a pool, sprinklers, that sort of stuff. We'll keep it fun and keep it cool.
We've given you a lot of bad news today about the heat wave, but it also brings an opportunity to do things you might not do otherwise, like eat ice cream for dinner, or settle back for a double feature in a chilly movie theater with nothing but a lap full of buttered popcorn and hours of indolence ahead. That reminds us of great movies past, like Jaws, which was released 50 years ago. Robert Thompson, professor of TV and pop culture at Syracuse University, joined Odyssey in the Bay Area to discuss how the movie became such a classic part of American summers.
First of all, how was Jaws received when it first came out?
Well, it was a big hit. It broke all box office records, which it only held for a couple of years because then Star Wars came out 1977, a couple of years later. But it was a big hit commercially, obviously, and critically, fairly big hit as well. Today, of course, everybody acknowledges that Jaws was a turning point in the history of the American cinema. Whether they consider it a good turning point or a bad turning point depends on who you talk to.
You know, Jaws has kind of become part of our American lexicon. We're going to need a bigger boat. Why do you think this movie has had such a lasting legacy?
And you're right. Even though the music you just played, I mean, that's right up there with the opening of the Twilight Zone as notes that have become part of the language. You use that music to state ideas as opposed to using words. I mean, I suppose part of it was it just so perfectly told. We've told lots and lots of stories about a big threat and people overcoming it and all the rest of it, but it was done so beautifully. And of course, the idea of going into the water, a common everyday thing, especially if you live near an ocean, and having these you know, almost supernatural threats come out of it. That scared a lot of people back then. I don't think we remember how many people were really afraid to go swimming after that, including in lakes, which didn't have any sharks.
I was going to ask, I mean, were people afraid to go in the water to be bitten by sharks before Jaws came out?
Well, I mean, I suppose depending on where you grew up, it wasn't as though they invented the shark attack. I remember as a little kid watching cartoons, and sharks in quicksand were some of the biggest threats of cartoons way back before Jaws. But it surely helped. And of course, you know, we think about how much was changing in movies. Jaws 1 came out in 75, then the sequel in 78, the third in 83. This is when the Star Wars movies are coming out. Jaws was the biggest box office of the year, 1975. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was number two, a totally different kind of movie, but also a really important one. Rocky Horror Picture Show came out that year. So it really was a turning point. And of course, we not only had Fear of Sharks before, we'd also had summer hits before, but the summer blockbuster was really invented in its modern iteration by Jaws, just like some of this shark fear was as well.
You mentioned it's considered a turning point in American cinema for good or bad. Tell us about the bad. Are there some people who don't like the fact that it became such a big blockbuster?
Well, I think the idea of the blockbuster, and of course that word existed before, but Jaws kind of redefined what a movie could actually do if you followed a whole bunch of new ideas of how you released it and how you promoted it, and then how much money, in fact, it could make. And Jaws set a bar, not only for fear and certain ways of telling stories, but it set a bar as to how much money a movie could make. And in many ways, that blockbuster mentality is still one that we live with. The same people complain that the American cinema has been taken over by the superhero movie. In many ways, that mentality really is in its infancy when Jaws comes out 50 years ago today.
I wonder if Jaws could be made today and have the same financial and critical success that it had 50 years ago. I mean, I guess we have Sharknado, so anything could happen.
Yeah, right. And how many of those did they make? Yeah, I mean, yes, you could still do big movies. It couldn't look the way it does now. I mean, when you think about it, in terms of horror, if you even call Jaws that, it's quaint compared to what we see today. It's not as bloody. It's not as explicit in all kinds of other different ways. It's really quite tame. But in 1975, it was pushing all kinds of buttons in ways that they haven't been pushed before. And, of course, the nostalgia. We've got, Major League Baseball games, Jaws theme, Tonight, Tomorrow, and the Next Day. Peacock is tonight on NBC. Spielberg will be introducing a replaying of it. And anything that you can make, put a shark on, from food to Funko Pops to backpacks to wines to Build-A-Bears, is now celebrating.
I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thank you for listening to On Deadline. It's produced by me and by Christy Strauser. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay informed.